You're listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Visit decentered.co.uk or follow on Instagram and Twitter at Decentered Media. Hello, it is Thursday the 9th of April 2026 and I'm Rob Watson and this is a Decentered Media podcast and I'm really pleased to be joined today by Agnes Gullias, and I'll get the pronunciations correct later, and Simona Bisciani. Brilliant. That's the first time I think I've introduced somebody and actually not mangled somebody's name. So there we go. So, and we're going to be having a conversation today about a report that they've both authored at Canterbury Christchurch University about challenges and opportunities for UK local media. And I'll put a link to the report where you can download it into the notes later on. But welcome. How are things hanging? What are you up to at this point? And then we'll get into you can tell us a little bit about your background and what motivated you for to write in this report.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you for inviting us and have a chat with about the report we've done. I think the weather is lovely at the moment where I am, and I'm sure it's not going to last very long, but busy in terms of after Easter with a variety of work, including local media research.
Simona, how about you?
Yeah, very nice in meeting you, Rob. And I guess I'm a bit of a new entrant in the UK academic space within media. So I'll give a little introduction about me. As you wonderfully pronounced, my name is Simona Bisciani. I'm a doctoral candidate, a PhD student at the University of Surrey. I'm not really in a journalism school per se. It's called the Institute for People-Centered AI. My background is really computational social science, and I use sort of data-driven methods to study local journalism in some ways. And I was approached by Agnes, I think about, I can't remember how long ago it was now, maybe like a year and a half or slightly more, with this proposal of doing a sort of literature review of the landscape of local news and research on local media in the UK. So I'm quite excited to have the chance to talk about it today with you.
Great. So the report, the headline that I've kind of extracted from it is that it asks us to think about local news not just as a, if you like, a commercial activity, but something which is what I'm starting to call foundational media, which is a kind of an essential local infrastructure provision. What was the motive for getting, Agnes, what was your motive for developing this report?
Maybe I'll give a little bit of background to myself as well, actually. So I'm a professor in media and communication at Canterbury Christchurch University. I was a journalist many, many years ago. I started as a journalist in Hungary, and then I did a PhD and moved in academia. And I've been teaching and researching news and journalism related topic for over 30 years or thereabouts. One of my main interests has been sort of local news and journalism. And in my experience, academic research, when I sort of became interested about 25 years ago, was lacking. There were sort of gaps in research, particularly in relation to what was happening at the time of the transformation, the impact of digital technologies and the new platforms in particular. And that was one of the areas one of my specialisms. But what happened, I think, I feel, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, there has been a growing academic interest in topic, both in the UK, but also in Europe, in other countries as well. And one of my motivation was that when participating in sort of non-academic discussions and debate, there wasn't really knowledge or some of actually what academic research has done or is doing. So the key motivation was those to try that bridge between sort of the academic research and professionals and the practice sort of world. This is not sort of a particular problem for local media research, I don't think. I mean, it's sort of a general sort of problems with sometimes with translating academic research into sort of broader social sort of environment. But that was, I think, the main motivation. It was to try to bring insights from academic research. And as you mentioned, it's not it can't be sort of a completely representative sort of sample of what academic research has been doing. We identified five key areas where we felt is sort of key challenges or key issues currently in the sector. And we gathered sort of academic research and insights around that.
Now, I'm going to throw something at you, which is a friend of mine used this phrase the other week, and it's, if the French can regulate cheese, why can't we regulate local media? So the starting point is, what do we mean by local media? And what do we mean by the, if you like, the what kind of interconnected system or ecology is this part of? And why is that? What's important about that and the status of it at the moment? So both from a media perspective or a journalism perspective, but also from that human-centred, the use factor, if you like, the way that people adopt and consume news and media. What are the kind of important issues with that?
Yeah, so I think, and it's one of the sort of area we looked at in the report, is that one of the challenges in actually discussing local media is the lack of agreement on what we mean. And I think that's complicated, and it's the sort of the digital transformation of the last 20, 25 years. So that complicated that debate. Yeah, because actually what we perceive, what local media is quite different than what was sort of 30, 40 years ago. Because if you think about it, at different parts of sort of the 19th, 20th century, there was sort of a general agreement, you know, in terms of, well, what we meant by local newspapers, and people sort of understood, okay, yeah, that's what we meant, or what we meant by local radio, yeah, in sort of in an analog area and so forth. And I think what sort of complicates in this new digital era, that sort of shared understanding of what actually that means is not there, and I think that's an important issue, and that we sort of covered in the report. Because if there is no sort of lack of understanding of what we mean, it's difficult to sort of identify then, well, actually what are the key issues, what could be sort of important things to research on, what are they then sort of how we could intervene. Yeah. So, and I think that's one of the problems with some of the sort of past policy interventions, that they sort of focus quite on sort of beyond dated understanding of what we meant by local media. Yeah. So for example, having sort of perceptions of, well, local news is what sort of local newspapers have been doing, if you see what I mean. Yeah. And I'm not sure now, I'm sort of addressing the full question.
But no, let me throw a question to Simona, because there's an active policy where this really plays out, which is the BBC Digital First policy for local media, which is, let me put it as perhaps as unkindly as I can to the BBC, because I'm not happy with it, and I can say that, but I'm not impartial. It's the move towards digital stories and digital journalism. They've centralized it regionally, or they've grouped it regionally, with the promise that it will give better local stories. But at the same time, they've reduced access and reduced output hours from BBC local radio stations. This is in England. So there's a kind of a push and a pull. There's a tension there of kind of who gets to define what local is, because actually in the legislation for broadcast radio, there isn't a definition of local. It's anything that's not national. So they've said, you know, it's too difficult. Ofcom, I've asked Ofcom this question, and they've said it's too difficult to come up with an answer. And I said, well, you know, if the French can regulate cheese, I'm sure we can. So the digital element of this, Simona, what is it that interests you in terms of that dynamic of how that's playing out in practice? Is that kind of what you're looking at, what you're interested in?
There are so many things I kind of wanted to follow.
Apologies.
Up.
I always tend to throw lots in.
conversation. I think the first one, if I can actually backtrace, and then if I forget about answering this question, please pick up my brain on it again. The first one is that I think there are sort of two strands of academic research that we went and tapped into when we were bringing this report to life. And one was a stream of research, which really occupies the bulk of the report, that is about local journalism. And that is in itself, I think, is a subset of perhaps what we may define as local media more generally. And then the other sort of little field that we touch upon every so often throughout the report is community media. And I think what happens a lot in regulatory spaces is that community media gets sort of excluded. And we may not have the same sort of understanding of what community media is between you and me. I think of, for example, like community papers, like small little pamphlets that get delivered through the door. Funny enough, I can see also this from a completely the opposite perspective. One of the things that I do within my work is I collaborate with the Public Interest News Foundation in curating their local news map database, if you've ever come across it. So I'm sort of the database curator, and I also do the reports for them about the state of local news. And one thing that I really understand the importance of is of drawing limitations and setting boundaries around terminology. And unfortunately, what this does is it just brings in inclusion and exclusion criteria, which are very difficult to make fair on the whole. And for example, if I want to mention the local news map by the Public Interest News Foundation, I think it could be more comprehensive in some ways. And it does not maybe capture really the whole multi-dimensional, pluralistic landscape of local media or community media, as we may want to refer to as a term, in the UK. When it tying now with what you were talking about, like digitalization. So I think really what we ought to consider is what is the role and value of local media in a society, and therefore shape our regulation in such a way that addresses and guarantees that this value is protected. And I think if we look at what happens in society nowadays, there is a lot of division perhaps and polarization, and perhaps these are sort of the questions that we ought to sort of look at. They are most important to address.
I know this is a back to the basics kind of question. It might just be, you know, kind of a really obvious one to us, but somebody listening to this who's not sure about these debates, is there an inherent value in our news and information being a part of it being local? What is the value of having locally originated, locally produced? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it might be that you get service better by using different platforms, which are not non-local, but you get some kind of value, some kind of a use value out of that. What are we talking about when we're saying that there is an inherent value of localness for our media, both from a production and from a consumer kind of end?
Yeah, so in the report, we've got a section which talks about the different roles and relevance of local media. There are different sort of category typologies, actually, in academic research around this. But we identified, I think, sort of five key areas. One is about information provision, so about the locality And then within that, you know, the importance of different type of information. The other was is about democratic sort of participation. Yeah, so sort of the role of local media in local democracies. The third one is about accountability. So that watchdog role, and more it's related maybe in relation to local journalism specifically, of local sort of powers and authorities in a specific area. The fourth one we talked about is community and social cohesion. So that's more regard in relation to the sort of community roles local media do play. So bringing together, integrating the communities, setting that sort of common values and sort of well-shared experiences. And the last one is about community identity and history. So it's about, for example, local newspapers is providing a sort of the memory of for the community, almost, you know, a record of what happened in the past, but also sort of keeping, history of the community. So those are sort of the five key areas. I mean, there's different categories sometimes in academic research translated differently, but I think that's the. But it's not to say that each individual local media outlet might sort of have to fulfill all these roles. That's not what we're talking about. It's just as a function, you know, that is sort of the important role and relevance, and that's why it's so important that we have a viable, sustainable, and thriving local media.
If I can add to that, you know, we were talking about shifts towards a regionalization, perhaps, of the local news environment, say on the part of the BBC, but also core commercial news publishers, which have centralized the production of the news. I think there becomes a question of if. Culture is sort of formed, and does the media have a role in forming culture and identity? And if that is the case, and media shifts towards a sort of regional type of perpetrating sort of like a regional identity, what is there for the impact on local communities, and which voices are ultimately represented? Could a regional identity actually be oppressive towards some communities within the region itself? I think we've read numerous accounts in qualitative research of local media that regionalization of the news does not make everybody very happy about that taking place. So, but at the same time, it's not that like regional is worse than local. Like from a philosophical perspective, I don't think there is a right and wrong in terms of what the value of local is, or what an identity ought to be like from a geographical perspective.
Is that from a kind of managerial? Let me put it that if we're looking at it as objectively and without without bias, and we see as a functional information exchange, yes, that seems to not make much difference, but. Culture doesn't operate that way, does it? I know my mum, who's 83, her friends stopped listening to BBC Radio Merseyside because it was full of reports from things going on in Preston and Manchester, and they lost a sense of what was happening in Liverpool. And it's kind of like, irrelevance to place. How does that fit within this hierarchy? Whereas as an administrator and a manager, you're sitting in a large corporation committee and you say, well, it's just information. And this is one of the problems I have with some of the ways that these debates and discussions are framed, is that it's and we see this in the government policy, which we can get into thinking about the local news model that DCMS has produced, is that it's information oriented, not community building or a belonging oriented, whatever phrase, what other alternative value system that you want to address this with. Well, does that make sense? Is that something that you see in the evidence?
Go ahead. I just very briefly, like in our, we have a chapter that looks at audience engagement in the report. And one of the things that we highlight is that people seek news that make them feel represented. They want to read about themselves, but they also like to read a story they stole by somebody they who is part of the community. And I think a lot of the changes that have been made in the commercial media environment, for example, have sort of removed little by little these elements of localness that connected people with a news brand. And we are flooded really by negative commentary about what has happened to legacy media in many places across the country. It's paradoxical, however, because from a commercial perspective, it's very difficult to maintain services that serve these niche or small communities. So it's a problem really to be solved in that sense. But I think the feeling represented is something that people absolutely seek and appreciate and that should be therefore protected.
Agnes, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to come in. I mean, I think that, you know, the geography issue is quite important, I think, in the discussions. And I think that's where we see, again, sort of the digital transformation of the last two decades had quite changed perceptions of what local is, yeah, in terms of compared to, because, you know, your mom and her friends had a very specific understanding of what local radio coverage should, you know, what's the reach of that? So, yeah, because that's what they were used to, I assume, I don't know how many years. So, and I think, previous structures, infrastructures for local media provisions had very clear sort of reach, sort of definitions. And that's in a digital area, that's that those boundaries are not clear. They can't be really clear. You know, we've got sort of clickbait local journalism, people reading it in Australia. You know, you've got all that sort of data as well. So it's a difficult question to determine. But sort of going back to your question of in terms of what should the maybe policymakers should focus on, I think it's that relates also back to the sort of the that political participation, so democracy role of local media, and then how then it's sort of matched to sort of local government and authorities, sort of boundaries and things like that. So it's in terms of the more cultural roles, the more social roles, that on the other hand links to sort of discussions about what community is, yeah, and how, you know, what's sort of the geographical location of the community, which is much more difficult, and obviously communities vary.
The interesting counterbalance to what I said as well, I think you both hinted at this, was the we may call it the diaspora, if you like, but the people you live in, people now are more mobile. They work in a more, many people work in a more mobile way. My mum is largely fixed in one place, but it's lots of people are driving around and they want to carry that. So if they've got an interest in the music scene in a particular town or the particular, the big question I always kind of try and understand, I suppose, is that the technology that's driven this centralization, that we've been told for the last 20 years that the only way to do this is economies of scale, the big corporations, the BBC, centralizing things, homogenizing things, and then finding ways to repackage things through a digital process, which we're expecting, you know, simulation of localness. That's my cynical view about this. However, the technology itself is actually works both ways. It can push out from the centre and it can enable. So I think you said, you know, the commercial imperative, finding a way to, well, if we only see this in one direction of travel, that everything has to be centralised and organised and managed and processed through a central management process rather than decentralizing it and pushing it outwards, which the technology enables to do. We can do a podcast. A lot of people have got very good smartphones now, which can, you know, record content. And there isn't that need for it to be so controlled by the center. But Well, is government, I mean, let's get on to thinking about the DCMS policy, because I think it's slap bang right in the middle of this. Is the government thinking in terms of the future, or is it thinking in terms of the past about the way that media might be organised? And what went through your minds when you were putting the report together? That kind of, I like to circle around a topic. I don't never attack it directly. It's like walk around the edges and look at it from every angle that you can. So it's like, did you get a sense that there's a bigger problem about our mindset?
Yeah, I think, well, maybe I'll come back to your first part of the question in terms of the technology or what's driving it. I mean, I agree that in sort of a larger sort of media organizations involved in local media provisions, then is a sort of a commercial or financial sort of imperative in terms of how they're going to actually make it happen, you know, in terms of content creation and all that. But, you know, as you say, technology goes both ways, and I agree. But and we've seen a huge increase of new, small, hyper-local provisions, you know, of various types, some focusing on sort of the community angle, some focusing on sort of news provision, providing content in a variety of different platforms, you know, whether it's podcasting, newsletter, or what have you. So I agree that in terms of the technology in itself, you know, it goes both ways. But it goes, you know, in even on those cases, and I think that's if I read the government sort of a paper, sort of they emphasize there is an acute challenge or urgency for sort of the financial models to be addressed, or sort of find sustainable ways to address the challenges. And I think they mentioned in the report that they particularly focus on that news, journalism, information provision, because they perceive that's the biggest challenge in, if you see what I mean. Yeah. Now, we can have an argument about that, whether that is the case. But in terms of, if you look at the sort of the decline of the sector, yeah, you could say that's probably is the part of the sector which saw the most decline in terms of, you know, the circulation of newspapers and so forth. So I'm not sure I answered all of the part of the question.
No, I'm not surprised.
So, you know, I was actually thinking, like, when we wrote the report, it was maybe about a year and a half ago. And at the time, like, you know, when we wrote this sort of final chapter on how can local media become financially sustainable, we didn't really have an answer per se, but we noticed that the UK, compared to other countries, suffers from a greater lack of institutional intervention in supporting a sector that is fundamentally distressed. This is despite perhaps sectors stating, the government stating here and there that they recognize the value of journalism as a pillar of democracy. And so there, like, may perhaps the sort of attachment to what the value of local media from a democratic perspective becomes sort of paramount when they discuss it. So I was very pleased to see, what was it, like a couple of weeks ago, the local media action plan being announced and £12 million coming into local news this year and the next year. I think, like, you know, it feels quite experimental from my perspective of what I know has been happening in the relationship between commercial media in the UK and the state. So I'm very excited to see what will happen. Through my work with the Public Interest News Foundation, I was involved in conversations with external funders and trying to see whether something like a philanthropic model of support for local media could become part of the answer to support, particularly the independent small sector, new sector, towards sort of financial sustainability in the long run. So it came a bit of a surprise that actually maybe some philanthropic organizations are going to fill that gap or jump in the short term, but actually it's government doing that. And I very much look forward to see how that will happen, what will be prioritized. In the report, we touch here and then about the different ways in which distribution mechanisms could be oriented. You could have a sort of needs-based approach to where you prioritize who is to benefit from an audience perspective, which parts of the country, which people, and or otherwise a publisher-oriented type of support that instead says these organizations, because they have these characteristics, because they made such a case, or because they're proposing such an innovation. And I think it will be interesting to really like understand what they prioritize. And I think this will tell us a little bit what they think is most important in terms of sector long-term sustainability.
There was some pushback about the media, local media action planning from Media Reform Coalition, which I thought was spot on, which was that this was decided with no public consultation, no discussion. And I was really shocked. I've been engaged in kind of lobbying and trying to get access to policy development at DCMS, and this was kind of locked away and decided seemingly by the News UK and the large scale corporate organisers. And are they, would we be throwing good money after bad? Is it a case that these are now such a decline, that there's so much decline in the way that they operate that we need fresh thinking? Is that something where we need to say, actually, we really do need to look at, we know that we need a vital news, what you put forward in the report about civic society, democracy, accountability, they're the values that we want to protect. Now, we can either pay for the BBC to do all of those things, but I'm not sure I want to live in a world which is dominated and, the monoculture of the BBC's model. We need plurality, and we need to be able to set up and organise our own viable media services that are outside of that institutional format. But if the commercial model is in the form it is at the moment, people haven't got the imagination to look at it afresh and to come up with new ideas about how to address it. Why should we keep propping them up? Why do they need public subsidy if they're commercial operators? They should be saying it's embarrassing to them to have public subsidy because they're commercial operators, and yet they constantly say it needs subsidy. And it's kind of, there's a tension there that I don't know how to resolve, and I'm waiting for because the big problem is the global tech platforms. It's Google and Meta and whoever else, Apple, who've hoovered up the platforms. And we're not addressing, do we need to address that challenge before we can start to address the local challenge?
Yeah, I very much agree. I think that's one of the sort of the platform power we emphasised in the report, that needs to be a cornerstone. And you don't see a lot of evidence of that in the local media action plan. Obviously, there needs to be, a part of a larger sort of approach. But in terms of, I very much agree that, and unfortunately the action plan doesn't go down to detail. So we just have to wait and see, as Simona said, how actually they're going to implement it. I very much agree that the money shouldn't go on sustaining sort of legacy infrastructures, but it should be focused on innovation. And if you look at other European countries, Holland is a good example. They have been subsidizing sort of local media innovation for the 3-4 years now, with a different extent. But this is not something new. There's other governments have been doing it for some other governments have been doing it for a while. And indeed, there is an EU project I've been involved which sort of set out, again, focusing on innovation in local media provisions. And that can, you know, you need a framework, what you mean by that, etc. But I agree that that needs to be the focus. I mean, the plan sort of mentions that that will be the focus, but it's not very clear. So I'm hoping that, you know, what they will sort of publish, it's not going to favour of the sort of the logo.
I'd have thought, given that you published this report, you know, a few months ago, they'd have been knocking on your door to say, why are you not key advisors for this? I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it? You know, hopefully I'm not putting you on a pedestal that you can't fulfil that role. But I'm sure if they come and knock on your door, because the section, there's two strategies that I think are in the report, which really appeal to me in a way. The strategy for audience engagement, which is about rebuilding trust and relevance, and then the financial structure, which, you know, I'm increasingly in favour of reduced protection. So that my view, the Media Act 24 was a protectionist model. It's very difficult, for example, to buy and sell or to set up a commercial radio station in the UK. It's almost impossible. The only stations that can get licenses particularly are, you know, community radio stations and the DAB stations, and they're very difficult to sustain, and there isn't a market there. So I'm in favour of a marketisation and removing the protections or the guardrails that have been put around because they always say, you know, the argument is from the big corporates is that, well, we're competing against the global platforms, we're competing against. But that isn't relevant for people in my neighbourhood. They want local news. And it's like, why are we obsessed with globalised competition, but we can't fix local provision? And I just wonder that relevance and trust and sustainability, what's your kind of thinking since the report? You know, what feedback have you had from people about that? What discussions of, you know, what's your flavour of feeling that you're that's emerged from the report about that?
Do you want to start something?
I think I was sort of going on a tangential line of thinking right now, where I think, like, in a way, if I don't really know what it takes to build a newsroom, etc., but I think if we wanted to ensure that every place that wants to have a local news provider, they're present, there needs to be a couple of ingredients, right, that will make it a successful experiment. You need to have people that want to provide local news and are capable of doing that. And I think maybe that is something that not every place across the country has the opportunity to offer. There may be different reasons why there may be a lack of talent or lack of willingness to be involved in producing local news. Like, it's not a particularly remunerative profession at the end of the day. And we talk, I think, somewhere in the report about a brain drain. This finding came from a foreign study, actually, from Norway. But I can imagine that this happens in the UK as well. I did a journalism degree in Scotland, and, you know, it wasn't the dream to be involved in regional news. It was to maybe use it as a springing board to then transfer to national later on. So that, I think, is one thing that you need. And the second thing, and I think we're seeing this more and more, is the willingness for people to actually sustain the sector. One of the most, like, how can I say, like, successful models right nowadays is the subscription-based model. And whilst this was sort of brought under the limelight by independent news providers, likes of the Bristol Cable perhaps first, and now more recently Mill Media, commercial news providers are just following suit. I think Breach now has 6 of their live network brands also being subscription-based. NewsQuest, I think, has 100,000 plus subscribers, which is really a lot compared to Reach's 15,000. Like, so, but it's showing a direction, right, of how we think local media long-term could be sustained. And I do hope that there will be a sort of cultural momentum where people will see journalism as something that deserves paying for, I think this is a sort of, it's, you know, the Reuters digital news report shows that the UK, maybe in the UK, 8% of people are willingness to pay for local news or pay for local news at present. I can't remember which. And I think it's not a very simple to answer question. I think this is deeply rooted in how we grew up with a free media service. It's one of the reasons why the BBC is so popular, right? Like with its really nice free product, free of ads. And, you know, yeah, so I really think like that is also something that we need to address.
Yeah, well, it's not really. I mean, they do pay the license fee, but yeah. I mean, I was going to say in terms of the audience and, you know, some of the discussions we Mr. Hyatt after the report. One was about media literacy and the importance of it, and I think it sort of relates back to what Simone is saying that, well, we hope that people appreciate. But I think there is an issue with, I think, how some audiences perceive local media and local news. You know, I did sort of local media audience research, and, you know, sometimes, you know, audiences say, oh, well, I can get that information on Facebook. But, you know, local information is not the same as local media or local news or community media. You see what I mean? So I think media literacy has got a very important role in addressing long-term this issue. I haven't seen enough of that in the government action plan. I think it needs to be, there needs to be done more at education level and elsewhere as well. I mean, I was pleased to see that some attempts are a bit limited in terms of getting young people to engage with it. But I think you need a bit more longer term and a bit more sort of strategic thinking how you might do that. And you know, a while when young people never. You know, avid readers of local newspapers in the past either. You know, if you go back 40, 50 years, you know, that was sort of a cycle there. But I think, you know, media literacy is the other, I think, one, the other we already mentioned is the platform power. Is, you know, how do we make, you know, local community media discoverable easily for people in a locality? Yeah. Because, and that's where I think platform ecology is an important aspect to look at. You know, what are the different platforms people can access local news and information and community media? And how do they, you know, how do they sort of learn about those platforms? And that's that needs sort of a long-term sort of strategic sort of thinking in terms of discoverability.
So we have an issue here in Leicester, and there was a recent report commissioned by SOAS into the trouble that took place in Leicester in 22. And one of its conclusions was there needs to be more secular spaces. And there's a place-based is different from identity-based. And this is why I'm starting to come to realise that even though my doctoral research was about community media, I'm actually finding that the term is increasingly empty in a way, or problematic in terms of it's we can community wash things, and who are we talking about? What are we talking about? And place based has a particular definition, and community has a definition. This is why I think a kind of a foundational model is maybe a little bit more useful, because it's describing infrastructure services that can be accessible on the basis of public need or civic need, if you like. Rather than it being purely seen as a consumer choice or as being something which is an obligation. So you must learn your media literacy skills. You know, nobody ever had to pass a test like you do to drive a car to use social media. And maybe that's the, you know, resulted in some problems, but, you know, we don't need permission. And it's a very complex and fragmented cultural issue about what people value, what people will pay for. But I think the phrase that kind of rattles in my head these days is kind of the incentive. What is the incentive? I think we've disincentivized, because people used to, you know, you say young people never used to read local local newspapers. They did for the sports and the football, but that was the only place where they could find that. Now you can find it everywhere. It's fending these things off, which is difficult. So we are in this changed environment, and the digital aspect of this is the primary aspect of it now. And I just wonder that kind of, you know, do I need to let go of more of my assumptions that I've brought with me? Simona, you are looking at this from a digital, I am guessing you would be more described as what used to be described as a digital native than either me or Agnes. Is that fair? So apologies if it's not, but, you know, is there an assumption there that we need to break through and say, look, you know what, we just need to stop applying this model that was done 40 years ago and think of something else. What's going to incentivize your friends, your colleagues to go, yeah, I want to start a local news service. I want to start a local storytelling service. I want to ground my practice of engagement with my place and community by using my skills to do this. What's going to excite people and inspire people to do that?
I think, like, you know, we talk, you hear a lot the phrase, like, meet audiences where they are. So I'm really supportive of media not stagnating in, like, nostalgic views of what the medium used to look like and instead, like, evolve with the times. Like, I'm not, for example, against Reach saying, let's do more video. If young people want video, absolutely, let's go for it. But let's not remove substance from the news. I think some element of seriousness needs to be retained. I think you can only, you can't just give people what they need all the time. It needs to be a bit
like TikTok. A you can't TikTok everything, can you? You know, it's like, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I cringe a bit sometimes, just to use a word that is very Gen Z. And I see a TikTok piece by the BBC that really I think could have been maybe done a bit more seriously or something like that. But yeah, this said, I also do think, like, you know, the meaning and the relevance of local shifts very much generationally. And even for me personally, like, you know, I don't really know why I'm studying local journalism, because as a person, my identity is everything but local. Like, I moved to a different country. I have international friends. Like, my group of friends is gathered by the commonality of being international and therefore sort of not belonging to the local community. And that's like, and I think, like, I see this with a lot of people in my sort of cohort university as well. Like, there is a different relationship to community. But that is not to say that it shouldn't be promoted or pursued.
I was in Manchester at the weekend and I visited the Arndale Centre, unfortunately, which I've never liked, but it's changed since from many years that I used to kind of go there previously. And they've got the big shops, they've got the big brand names, they've got the Starbucks and the TK Maxx and everything. But they've also got the market. They've got a food court there, which is an international food court with Thai, Japanese, Korean. You know, there's all sorts of food there. And that kind of, for me, it kind of gives me confidence that I think the local news element is to provide the space and the structure in which people can experiment and try different options, and they may come and go, and they may be fashionable and it might excite people at one point or the other. And food's a good analogy because it does tend to bind people. You know, interest in cuisine and food is interculturally quite acceptable for most people to engage with. Whereas the big brands, they're going to do what they're going to do. You know, whether I choose to use independent if I can for my coffee shops, that kind of thing. So it becomes a choice within a mixed economy rather than being, and I think we're being scared into thinking, I think we're being pushed into thinking that this is all being dominated by the global corporates. I wonder if that's a scare story that we not, maybe we've internalized, which we kind of have to kind of be more confident to say we can break out of. I'm aware of the time, and I know you've got other stuff to get on and do. Are there any kind of last thoughts that from the publication of the report that's kind of given you encouragement to go, yes, this was really worth doing this? Have you come away with a positive response I mean, you might have had lots of negative responses, but counterbalanced by a positive response that, yes, this has provided something for food for thought for people.
Yes, we did get a positive response, actually, and we were invited to a couple of events, and we had a webinar as well, which I think was quite useful. Obviously, the report is written in a particular time, so if we were going to rewrite it in next year, probably it will be a bit, you know, different, and that's fine, I think. But I'm hoping to use this and some other initiatives to bring that academic and practice professional sort of circles a bit closer together in terms of exploring solutions, you know, ways forwards, and sort of sharing good practice. Because I think, yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to mention, which I think I discussed after the publication of the report, that the importance of sharing good practice between different sort of geographical area and local media provisions and between different countries is really important in finding ways forward for some part of the sectors.
Yeah, I thought like doing this report was a great sort of self-reflexivity, or I don't know if I'm saying correctly, exercise, where we sort of, you know, we started off with this question, like, if there is such a thing as a research practice gap, like a sort of isolation between the world of academia and practice, we ought to try and narrow this gap. And this sort of prompted a question, but why ultimately, what is the value that academic research brings to the world? And in that sense, like, to what extent also may academic research serve journalism as a field, or does it exist to serve the institution, the academy, as opposed to the field? And I think these are very interesting questions that I hope we will explore further. But from a reception perspective, I think we saw that the report got downloaded quite a lot, and then it was also cited in the local media action plan. So that would came as a pleasant surprise. But I really do hope that it really will do what we hoped it would, that is bringing together academics and industry practitioners.
Well, two things that I hope follow on from the publication of the report is, one, that citation gets turned into a phone call from DCMS to say, come and talk to us. That's really important. And two, there is a scarcity of this kind of analysis of media. I call it boots on the ground in the UK. We often tend to focus in terms of academic publications about what's happening internationally, and there is very little data. And so seeing this really, you know, kind of, it was exciting to see that you'd gone through this process and you brought this together, because it actually meets a real need, and it will be useful, and hopefully we can build on it in other areas. So I think it's, you know, it's a very welcome report, and I certainly like the scope of it, and there's hopefully it'll lead into, you know, more specialised for each of the areas that you've identified, thinking and engagement. So I think it's a report worth reading. So any last thoughts before we sign off? No, great. You're welcome. No, you're more than welcome. So if you, I'll put some links into the show description for this. If you want to find out more information about me, I'm Rob Watt, Decentered Media on the social media platforms, at Decentered Media, and it's decentered.co.uk. But for now, thank you very much for your time, Agnes and Simona. It's been a wonderful conversation, and I'm sure we might come back to this at some point. So looking forward to that.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. To find out more, go to decentered.co.uk or follow on Twitter and Instagram at Decentered Media.